This is Ham College, episode 123, for March 28th, 2025. Ham College is brought to you by ICOM, combining cutting-edge technology, unmatched reliability, and user-friendly design. ICOM's amateur radios are the gold standard for ham radio enthusiasts. Good evening. Welcome to another episode of Ham College. I'm Professor Thomas.
And I'm Dean Martin.
Boy, we have a show for you tonight.
We do have one. You're right.
Yeah. What did we talk about in the last episode?
Let me think about it. I think best I remember we talked about public service stuff. Maybe a little emergency operations, applicability of FCC rules, races, ARIES, net and traffic procedures, operating restrictions during emergencies, and use of phonetics in message handling.
Tonight, we're not going to talk about anything like that.
Yeah?
We're going to talk about radio wave characteristics, how radio signal travels. We're going to talk about fading, multipath, polarization, wavelength versus absorption, and antenna orientation.
That seems like a little more fun.
It does. That's, of course, the other stuff was fun for people who are into that.
Yeah.
But everybody's into using radio waves.
That's why we're here.
Yep. Well, we have a group of questions here based on those topics that we just talked about. We even have, and as I said, a previous semester, we discussed these topics.
Go figure.
And we did some probably unusual or bizarre demonstrations talking about these particular topics, and I felt the need to bring that out again.
Unusual or bizarre? Are you sure it was us?
It couldn't have been, huh?
Tonight's topic is radio propagation. By definition, radio propagation is the behavior of radio waves when they're transmitted or propagated from one point on Earth to another, or into various parts of the atmosphere. As a form of electromagnetic radiation, radio waves are affected by various factors such as reflection, refraction, diffraction, absorption, polarization, and scattering. That's a mouthful right there. That's a lot of actions.
That's a lot of reads in there.
Yeah. Some of you have heard of this before. It's been referred to as skip or other slang terms like that.
Yeah.
Since radio communications typically line of sight, propagation is the magic that allows you to talk around the curvature of the Earth. Radio propagation is affected by the changes of water vapor in the troposphere and ionization in the upper atmosphere due to the sun. Understanding the effects of these different conditions can help determine which bands are best to work at various times. Radio propagation is also affected by several factors determined by its path from point to point. This path can be a direct line of sight path or an over-the-horizon path, aided by refraction in the ionosphere. Factors including ionospheric radio signal propagation can include sporadic E, spread F, solar flares, geomagnetic storms, and other solar events.
I'm with you so far.
Okay, good. Radio waves at different frequencies propagate in different ways. For instance, at extremely low frequencies, ELF, the wavelength is much larger than the separation between the Earth's surface and the D layer of the ionosphere, so electromagnetic waves may propagate in this region as waveguide, which basically means it's channeling it right through.
It's ducting is what we call that. Uh-huh.
The interaction of radio waves in the ionized region of the atmosphere make radio propagation more complex to predict and analyze than in free space. Ionospheric radio propagation has a strong connection to space weather.
Yeah, it does. And there was something I wanted to show here, Tommy. You're showing the ionospheric layers here in this graphic.
Uh-huh.
This one right here, I was thinking, the ionosphere is just one of the layers.
Yeah, there are actually layers in the ionosphere.
Yeah. I did not realize that the atmosphere itself had the exosphere, the thermosphere, the mesosphere, the stratosphere,
and the troposphere. I was thinking the ionosphere was one more layer down in there, but no, actually, it extends over several of these atmospheric layers.
Oh, okay.
You see that there? It goes all the way from the exosphere down through the thermosphere and right down near the mesosphere or mesos. I guess that's how you say that. But anyway, I digress.
Is this the epiphany that you had?
This is the epiphany I had. I did not realize that the ionosphere was not just another layer in the atmosphere. It's actually kind of running parallel to it, is the way I interpret this right here.
Yeah, well, you could be right.
Yeah, could be wrong, too. But.
A sudden ionospheric disturbance or shortwave fade-out is observed when the X-rays associated with a solar flare ionize the ionospheric D region. Enhanced ionization in that region increases the absorption of radio signals passing through it. I told you, this is some pretty heavy-duty stuff.
Yeah.
During the strongest solar X-ray flares, complete absorption is virtually all ionospherically propagated radio signals in the sunlit hemisphere can occur. These solar flares can disrupt HF radio propagation and affect GPS accuracy. And that's a lot of stuff that, that Dr. Tamitha does on talks about on Ham Nation, which is pretty interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm. There's several different types of propagation.
Yeah.
That we've got.
Yeah, but some of those are ground wave, sky wave, meteor scatter, auroral backscatter, sporadic e-propagation, tropospheric scattering, tropospheric ducting, rain scattering, airplane scattering, which I haven't heard of that one before, lightning scattering. But luckily, there's some pretty cool online resources to kind of help mm-hmm. you predict and determine the propagation conditions. And I did Google it when I was looking some of this stuff up, and mm-hmm. there were quite a few interesting hits, and there are actually some apps for your phone as well.
Huh. Maybe we should have downloaded some of those.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so.
Well, let's kind of talk about a few of these various types as well as we can.
Okay.
I think we got a little demonstration we can do here. First, let's take a look at what a ground wave looks like. Say I've got my handy talkie here.
Yeah,
we're going to talk ground wave.
Here, let me transmit to you over there.
Okay, and you're using...
I'm using my laser pointer here.
Mm-hmm. If we can get it lined up, it's kind of tough.
Well, your handy talkie's not on the...
Yeah, there it is. So now I'm hearing Tommy just straight path between us here. This would be W5 called ground
JDX,
wave.
W5JDX, M5ZNO.
You're sounding kind of red tonight. All right, so now that's good when we can talk ground wave. We've got a path straight between us. But what if there was a mountain right here? I don't have a fake mountain.
You don't have a
handy
mountain
here. Actually, I do. Here we go. I've got a box of awesome right here. Now hit me with ground wave.
Yeah, it's not working out so well.
Not really working, is it? Nope. So how do we get around this? Well, depends on what band we're on, but on some bands, we've got sky waves. This is the sky right here.
That is?
Yeah. Now, we're going to have to make the mountain a little bit shorter.
Is this the ionosphere?
That's the ionosphere. So hit me up there with a little bit of
I have no idea.
Wave.
I have no idea where they're hearing me.
Yeah. Help. I saw it there. There it was. Got it. Well, I think we're going to have to adjust the sky wave there a little bit. There we go. Now, you're going up. You're hitting one of the layers up here in the ionosphere, and you're bouncing back down here on my arm. There we go. I got it in my hand now.
There you go.
That would be an example of sky wave.
Yeah.
So we've talked about ground wave, sky wave. Now show us meteor scatter.
That's
not really able
to
pull
fan,
that off.
Ceiling fan scatter is about the best I can do.
Yeah. I should have tied some tinfoil around the blades up there, and we could have maybe done it.
Maybe.
Meteor scatter, that's when your signal's bouncing off the tail of meteors.
Yeah.
That's
pretty amazing. to think about that even happening.
Yeah. But it does.
Yeah.
Auroral backscatter.
Yeah, a lot of these I've never heard of.
Yeah. Sporadic e-propagation, we're familiar with that. That happens a lot. Now, a lot of these are 6 meters really, you know, plays into a lot of these modes.
Yeah, six and ten in that area.
Tropospheric scattering and tropospheric ducting. I think those are the same thing. I could be wrong on that. But that's when, and we don't have enough mirrors or we could show you that. The signal goes up, it hits a troposphere, and then it bounces back, goes a little ways, hits the bottom of it, bounces back up. It just kind of rides through the troposphere there.
The tropospheric ducting is usually when there's like a temperature inversion.
It is.
It basically makes a channel.
Uh-huh.
And like we were talking about the waveguide earlier, it basically runs it through a channel that's up in the troposphere.
So what happens is there's a layer of air cooler on the ground than it is up there at a certain level in the troposphere. So what happens is cold air gets trapped up in there. There's a warm layer below it, and that's how it's able to go up and bounce around in there and then come back down somewhere else. And I've observed that a lot working in broadcasting over the years. I had a station that was, transmitter site was 20 miles away. The antenna was 1,800 feet in the air. 100,000 watt station. No problem listening to it on anything you wanted, you know, around the area here. Really good signal. Some mornings we would have tropospheric ducting, also might call it a temperature inversion, and they couldn't even pick up the station there at the studio. They were hearing some other station.
Oh, wow.
And you would think that the antenna, the transmitter was off the air, that it wasn't working. We were hearing somebody else. No, the transmitter was on the air. What was happening is that layer of hot air was occurring below the 1,400-foot level, and the signal was just getting trapped in there and running along, ducting along, coming down somewhere else. So it was just skipping right over the top of, you know, our intended area here. The way I worked around that is I had a backup antenna that was down about 500 feet. And so I could switch over to the auxiliary antenna. And then you could hear it because we were below
the phenomenon.
Yeah, and we'd run like that a few hours till the duct cleared on out.
Yeah, you know, we've experienced that before. Used to when I would drive a good ways in the morning to work. On those mornings when it'd been warm and it gets cool at night, or you know, right before the morning starts warming up, can hear repeaters for 250 miles off.
Yeah,
just like they're right here.
They're really. An exciting part of being a technician and working 2 meters, that's when you can work some long-distance stuff on 2 meters.
Yeah, that's fun. That's really fun stuff, and it mostly happens in the morning. So, you know, especially when the weather's kind of changing.
Late in the evening.
Yeah, it does happen in the evening, but I've had better luck with it in the mornings myself.
Well, that's because you go to bed in the evenings and get up in the morning, and I was doing right the opposite.
Yeah, see? Works out well for me.
Yeah, but it's also it's seasonal. You know, more certain times of the year you're more likely to see it than others, and certain parts of the country you're more likely to see it than others. But definitely something that you'll enjoy if you get your technician exam, get on 2 meters. You can even work it on a handy talkie when it's really coming in good. You know, it's just amazing. You know, you're talking to somebody 500 miles away on a handy talkie.
Yeah. It's pretty fun stuff.
Yeah. Rain scattering. You know, I'm not sure what they're meaning here, but you wrote it down, so explain it to us.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I believe it's when, just because all the rain drops and it just kind of diffuses or diffracts the radio signals and just kind of scatters them all over.
Yeah, I think that's
kind of like the shotgun approach.
Yeah, that's going to affect the higher frequencies, I believe. Particularly, well, maybe what they mean there is like what we'd call a rain fade. on satellite. You know, you've got such a heavy rainstorm. We were talking about DirecTV earlier this afternoon. You were thinking about maybe going to it, and I was talking about my experience with it. It worked great, except, you know, when it got a super heavy thunderstorm, mm-hmm. it would fade out.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And the same thing can happen with, say, microwave communications, you know, that are working point to point with the dishes on the ground. You can get on the higher frequencies enough rain that, you know, it'll make it fade.
Mm-hmm.
Airplane scattering, that is interesting. I wish I had some audio we could play of that. I've observed that a number of times.
Really?
Do you?
I have not.
You have, but you didn't know it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised.
I bet you. What it sounds like, you're talking to somebody, say on with say 2 meters. I suspect 440 would be affected by it as well. Not sure about 6 meters, maybe. And you know, you're within range of each other, and all of a sudden you hear a fading of the signal, rapid fading up and down,
mm-hmm.
you know. And you don't lose them. You still got them, but you're just hearing the signal kind of fade up and down real quick. You can look up, and you'll see a jet flying over.
Hmm.
And when that jet gets, you know, on further where it's not between the two of you there, it goes away. What's happening there is it's causing multipath. I mean, you're hearing, you know, the ground wave signal straight between us, but we're also getting a reflection off that airplane mm-hmm. coming back down, and it's out of phase, so it's counseling. And it's an interesting effect. First few times I heard it, I wasn't exactly sure that's what it was, but then I got to noticing there's always an airplane flying over when I heard that sound.
Oh, that's pretty interesting stuff.
It is. And then lightning scattering.
Yeah, that one I don't think I've experienced either. I've heard lightning interference.
Yeah.
I've never had it work to my favor, but it was in part of the data that I looked up. So,
you know, we were talking about the ionospheric layers, and you start closest to the Earth, and you got the D layer, and then you got some E layers. It's split up into more than one layer. Then you got a couple of F layers, F1 and then F2. The D layer, the one closest to the Earth there, how far out do you think that one is, Tommy?
Less than 100 kilometers.
So you're saying 25 to 55 miles.
That would probably be my guess.
And what is the D layer good for? What band does it affect the most? It's 7 megahertz or 40 meters. And we've only got a D layer during the daytime. Did you realize all these layers we're looking at here, the only one we've got at night is the F layer. The others kind of go away because the sun's not, you know.
They're all driven by the sun, sort of?
Yep. So at night we've got those top ones there, the F layer. During the day, you know, we've got Ds, Es, and Fs. So if we move on up from the D layer, the next one we got there would be the E layer. And the E layer is out, how far would you say it is out?
Well, it looks to be a little over 100 kilometers, so 50 to 100 miles.
Yeah, 55 to 90 miles, roughly. And the E layer, what it's good for, and there again, the E layer goes away at night. But during the daytime when we got it, it works best for reflecting 14 megahertz. Or the 20-meter band. So we can see as the layers get higher, the frequencies that are being affecting get higher.
Mm-hmm.
The next one, well, we've got a couple of F layers there, and these are the ones that, are really important. All of them are, but 90 to 150 miles out would be the F1 layer. And what's it going to affect most? 21 megahertz. How many meters is that? 15 meters?
So what's the F2 layer good for?
Yeah, the F2 layer is, greater than 250 miles. That one is good for 28 megahertz or 10 meters. The F1 and F2 layers, those become just the F layer at night. There's only one layer at night.
Oh, okay.
I didn't talk about the 80-meter band. The 80-meter band, you know, is really only open at night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's when you get the best distance out of it. I should have studied this more, don't you think? And you should have, too.
Yeah, unfortunately, I had no time.
Why is 80 meters open at night, and it goes contrary to everything we just said about that? The ionospheric layer is there. You see that D layer right there? That absorbs signals from 1 to 7 megahertz during the day. And so that's why we don't have good 80-meter propagation during the day, is that D layer there.
Mm-hmm.
At night, the D layer goes away, so it's not absorbing our spectrum below 7 megahertz anymore. This is what we're talking about tonight. It's going to be interesting questions here for sure.
Yeah, I'll probably be exhausted when we leave here.
Me too.
Just like that.
That's all we have to say about that.
It's an abrupt stop.
A blast from the past.
Almost got a crick in my neck. It stopped so quick.
Yeah. So, we didn't feel like we could explain that any better.
That was a good clip.
Yeah. I really like the laser pointer demonstration there.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it got the point across, I think.
It was more like a... yeah, it was. I had it right there in the palm of my hand.
Yeah, you still got that blister on your hand?
I do. I was looking at it a while ago. Left a mark. Don't go away, because we've got questions now to go with this course material we just studied.
Combining cutting-edge technology, unmatched reliability, and user-friendly design, ICOM's amateur radios are the gold standard for ham radio enthusiasts. Whether you're chasing DX, experimenting with digital modes, or leading a local net, ICOM radios deliver crystal-clear performance and seamless connectivity. With a legacy of innovation and commitment to quality, ICOM continues to set the benchmark for amateur radio excellence, making them the trusted choice for operators worldwide. Introducing ICOM's IC7760, the pinnacle of base station excellence for amateur radio enthusiasts. Designed to deliver unmatched performance, the IC7760 features state-of-the-art technology, exceptional RF clarity, and an intuitive interface, all housed in a sleek and durable design. The base station features a separate remote control head and RF deck, providing excellent flexibility for installation. Place the RF deck closer to the antenna feed point, freeing up space on your desk. You can also connect the control head to the RF deck through your home network, enabling remote operation from anywhere in your home, without need for a PC. Pair the IC7760 with the powerful ICPW2 linear amplifier and take your contesting experience to the next level. The ICPW2 seamlessly integrates with the IC7760, delivering a massive power boost and enabling enhanced long-distance communications with DPD, digital predistortion, and a built-in 2x6 automatic antenna selector for SO2R single operator 2 radios. Together, they define what's possible in amateur radio, setting a new standard for global connectivity and reliability. For more information about all of ICOM's great amateur radios, visit icomamerica.com/amateur.
What do you say we give away the shirt right off your back?
Okay. How about we just give away one like it?
That'll work.
Cool ICOM ham crew t-shirts. Let me give you the full effect here.
You look as good coming as you do leaving.
Good sort of. Leave with ham fuzzy. You do what you got there.
Yep. If you would like to win one of those, there's a real easy way to do that. What is that?
Man, it is so easy. All you got to do is send an email to hamcollege@amateurlogic.tv. You can put a note in there if you want to. You don't have to, but a name would be handy. And then that's it. You'll be entered into the drawing for next month.
Yeah. Doesn't even cost the price of a postage stamp. Just send an email.
Yep.
hamcollege@amateurlogic.tv. Get your name in the list right now. We know you guys out there in the chat room. I suspect a few of you have email.
Pretty sure.
Yep.
Yes, I would say the majority of them probably have it.
Yep. This guy right here did.
He did?
Yeah.
Oh, Dennis. Dennis Cornell. KL7HRO. Says, hello, George and Tommy. I'm sitting here watching the shows on Roku on the smart TV. Had lots of good info the other day on amateurlogic.tv. Getting batteries sent to Alaska from Amazon is almost impossible. Well, that's right. He lives in Alaska. Favorite line from Amazon is no delivery to Alaska. I had to have a bag of crimp PL259 sent to a friend in South Dakota. He had to repackage them and send them to me via USPS. We're red hair children up here. Have fun at your next ham fest. 73 Dennis. Yeah, it's good to hear from Dennis. Well, Dennis, you won. They'll be getting in touch with you to get your size information and shipping information.
Yep.
For the cool shirt.
You'll get the cool shirt plus whatever else Jesse can stuff in the box. Why don't you ask, and this is not rigged. I want you to know that.
Right.
Because I have them printed out here, but I haven't looked at them. So.
Right.
Here, you can, all right, I'll ask you.
It doesn't matter.
All right, ask me the first one.
Why do VHF signal strengths sometimes vary when the antenna is moved only a few feet? A, the signal path encounters different concentrations of water vapor.
B, VHF ionospheric propagation is very sensitive to path length.
C, multipath propagation cancels or reinforces signals.
Or D, all of these choices are correct. Why do VHF signal strengths sometimes vary when the antenna is moved only a few feet? A, the signal path encounters different concentrations of water vapor. No. Water vapor really doesn't affect VHF much, if any. B, VHF ionospheric propagation is very sensitive to path length. If you're talking VHF, you're not really using the ionosphere so much. You're more than likely doing line of sight communications, sometimes slightly over the horizon. So it can't be D, all these choices are correct. So it's going to be C, multipath propagation cancels and reinforces signal strengths. What do you think?
Yep, I would concur with that.
The folks in the chat room all do.
But it doesn't have to be a few feet, it can actually be a few inches.
Exactly. Doesn't take much at all. There you go.
All right, I'll give you that one.
Multipath. If I'm talking to Tommy like with that laser pointer a while ago, or he was talking to me, whichever, we've got a direct signal between us, but also the signal is going over here and bouncing off this car next to me and then coming back down at Tommy, bouncing off that water tank over there, reflecting off this car right next to me, a tree. Anything, you know, the signal is going out and it's hitting other objects and it's being reflected. If Tommy sitting over there is receiving the direct signal and all these other bounced signals, they're going to be delayed from the direct signal and it's going to cause him to be in and out of phase with the original signal. So exactly what it says there, multipath propagation cancels or reinforces a signal. If you're at that stoplight and the repeater drops out, quick solution, very easy solution. Pull up a couple of inches.
I do that talking to you when I go home.
Yeah.
If I back up into my spot where I normally am, a lot of times you can't hear me, but if I'm going to sit there and talk for a minute, I'll roll up about 6 inches and I can
speak
perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. I also heard yesterday... I was listening, you know, I listened to the air band a lot on that 8600 receiver at the house a lot. And I heard the signal that came in and it started echoing. like I could hear it. It was real fast, but you could hear it was the same thing twice, and then it kind of cleared up.
Wow.
I don't know if it went behind the trees. I don't know what it, how it did it, but I did hear that.
What was it? An airplane you were listening to?
Yeah,
you were hearing multipath, and probably some of it. Well, delayed enough you could detect it more than a phase shift is actually.
Yeah, I mean it was very brief, but you could tell there were two signals there, the exact same thing. It's kind of neat.
Well, I got a question for you.
All right.
What is the effect of vegetation on UHF and microwave signals? A, knife edge diffraction.
B, absorption.
C, amplification.
Or D, polarization rotation. That doesn't sound like much fun. Polarization rotation. Amplification vegetation. Knife edge diffraction. I'm just going to go straight for the one I think it is, because I don't know. I don't know why they would even have these others on there. I don't know what polarization rotation is. And I'm not sure what knife edge refraction is. I know it's not amplification. Vegetation doesn't do that, so it's going to absorb it.
I'll agree with you. Chat room, they're agreeing with you as well. Absorption. There you go. Absorb that.
What antenna polarization is normally used for long-distance CW and single sideband contacts on the VHF and UHF bands? A, right-hand circular.
B, left-hand circular.
C, horizontal.
Or D, vertical. What antenna polarization is normally used for long-distance CW and SSB contacts on the VHF and UHF bands? It's not right-hand circular, and it's not left-hand circular. It's going to be either horizontal or vertical. Most VHF and UHF communications on FM are going to be on vertical antennas, like on your car.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of VHF and UHF communications will be that way. But if it's single sideband or CW, those guys are using beams. And they're mounted horizontally polarized. They're not vertical. They mount them horizontal. You could do that with a dipole as well. Horizontal dipole, but I just happen to know those guys who do the VHF and UHF contesting are usually doing CW or sideband, and they're all horizontal, so if you're trying to communicate with them on a vertical, you may not do so well.
Yeah.
Horizontal.
So I tried. There used to be a group in North Mississippi and some up near Memphis that had, they've got on a 2-meter sideband.
Yeah.
A lot. But they were all horizontal polarized. I couldn't even really hear them down here.
No. I have heard some guys doing that before, but I couldn't get back to them.
I always wanted to try that, but I don't know if there's just even enough activity around here to warrant putting up an antenna for it.
Well, probably. I don't know. There used to be a group that did that. Irving, Tebow, and those guys.
Oh, they did it here?
They did it.
Okay.
And there might still be some. I don't know. But basically, when you've got that tropospheric ducting going on, that would be a good time to do it.
Mm-hmm. It would seem like it'd be kind of fun.
Yeah.
Just to try.
Of course, if it's tropospheric ducting, that signal may be getting rotated some, so you might get away without being strictly horizontally polarized. But it makes a difference. If your antenna is vertical and the guy over here is horizontal, you might just miss each other altogether.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when antennas at opposite ends of the VHF or UHF line of sight radio link are not using the same polarization? A, the modulation sidebands might become inverted.
B, the received signal strength is reduced.
C, signals have an echo effect.
Or D, nothing significant will happen. Well, if we were trying to talk and I was horizontal, you were vertically polarized, I'm pretty sure something significant is going to be the outcome of it. So it's not going to be D. Signals have an echo effect. That's not going to cause multipath like we were just talking about. B, received signal strength is reduced. I'm pretty sure that's it. A, modulation sidebands. No, I'm going with B, bravo. Received signal strength is reduced.
That's what they're saying in the chat room. There is a little delay tonight in the folks watching live, so the answers are a little bit slower coming in.
Oh, okay. I forgot about that.
Yep. I'm going to agree with you.
When using a directional antenna, how might your station be able to communicate with a distant repeater if buildings or obstructions are blocking the direct line of sight path? A, change from vertical to horizontal polarization.
B, try to find a path that reflects signals to the repeater.
C, try the long path.
Or D, increase the antenna SWR. When using directional antennas, how might your station be able to communicate with a distant repeater if buildings or obstructions are blocking the direct line of sight path? All right, they didn't specify a band that you're using here, but if it's a repeater, most often VHF or UHF. D, increase the antenna SWR. I think we all know that's not really going to help you get through an obstruction. It's going to attenuate your signal. So, no, increasing the SWR will not help you. Try the long path. Well, if I'm looking line of sight to you and there's something blocking it, me turning around and trying to shoot around the world and come back to you is not really going to help on a repeater.
Two meters isn't going to really work well like that.
Not really. A, change from vertical to horizontal polarization. If there's something obstructing it in between, changing the polarization is not going to matter really. B, try to find a path that reflects signals to the repeater. That's your answer right there.
You mean like get your buddy to hold up the mirror?
That'll work.
So you can hit it.
Yeah. We're getting bees in on the chat room over there.
Yeah, I would concur.
Try to find a path that reflects signals to the repeater.
Just don't use vegetation.
No, it doesn't reflect that well.
Nope.
Unless it's an aluminum tree.
Do they may make those anymore?
Aluminum, I don't know.
Tree. Remember those?
Yeah, I remember them. And you got that color wheel?
Yeah.
Those were cool, man.
Heck yeah.
You were really uptown if you had one of those. We didn't have one. We just went and cut a tree out of the woods. I've seen this done in person years before I was a ham, when I was working at a television station.
Yeah.
And it wasn't on VHF or UHF. It was a remote pickup unit where I believe it probably operated in around 2 gigahertz. We had a pneumatic mast on the remote van that would raise the antenna up. Probably, I think this was a 40-foot mast, and it had a directional antenna, and we would point it back toward the studio where there was a tower that would receive that signal. That's how we'd do live broadcasts from a parade or a news event or something like that. We were downtown, and there was a building blocking us, and we could not shoot through that building, especially on those frequencies, and get a signal back to the studio. Just wasn't possible. It was being obstructed. There was a water tank sitting right over here to the side. They turned the antenna, pointed at the water tank. Boom.
Yeah.
Got it.
What frequency was that on?
It was around 2 gigs. I think it was right below 2 gigs. Probably. Awesome. I don't remember. But so, yeah, that really works. Cool.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah. What is the meaning of the term picket fencing? A, alternating transmissions during a net operation.
B, rapid flutter on mobile signals due to multipath propagation.
Or C, a type of ground system used with vertical antennas.
Or D, local versus long-distance communications. It's not D. It's not local versus long-distance. And picket fencing is not a type of ground system used with vertical antennas. Although it sounds kind of cool. Rapid flutter on mobile signals due to multipath propagation. Or A, alternating transmissions during a net operation. The answer is B, Bravo. Rapid flutter on mobile signals due to multipath propagation. I'm sure of it.
That's what all the cool kids in the chat room are saying. I'll agree with you.
Yeah.
And you'll hear that if you've got 2 meters.
You hear it a lot.
Yeah.
If you're mobile.
Yep.
If you, like, if you're mobile going home, signal's not that strong. You know, when you go between the trees all over here, mm-hmm. they absorb foliage. Yep. So when the signal goes between it, you're going to get shots.
Yep. It's like you were trying to talk through a fan, a real slow-moving fan. The signal's just kind of fluttery.
Yeah.
That's a good description of it there.
We experienced that a lot.
We have. Anybody working UHF, VHF, mobile is going to experience that. We'll be right back.
Around the 15th of each month, it's Amateur Radio's original and longest-running video podcast, AmateurLogic.tv, with hosts George Thomas, Tommy Martin, Emil Diodene, and Mike Morneau.
Roughly, here's what I have. The bottom trace here is ground.
While the elements will jiggle some, they're actually not too bad. It's light.
After putting it together, I decided to test everything, so I ran in 12 volts, and I'm measuring the output here.
No, it's not too windy right now, Jim. It was yesterday.
We're in the antenna switching matrix. Any one of our 6 broadcast transmitters could be connected to any of the 22 antennas.
I personally am so thrilled that George got the special award. Well deserved, my friend. That's really cool. Yeah,
what about the Super Bowl, Emil? Did you go to the Super Bowl, or were you at home operating that night?
Tuning my amplifier, and I lost power in the shack and went outside. The house lost power. And the whole neighborhood went out for about 30 minutes. I don't know what happened.
That explains a lot. Now, we can take this and put it over inside our box. It's flush to the bottom. If we were to rotate, we can see that thing goes all the way through, so we'll have a hole in the bottom.
What ammunition do you use in there?
Actually, you can use black powder. You can use WD-40. You can use, you know, anything combustible. You just have to use the right quantity, and we assume no responsibility for mishaps.
Here's what it looks like after I've got them all soldered together and heat shrinked up. Okay, let's give it a try and see how it worked out. So there you have it, the hula loop. No, you can't null out the dogs barking.
I have 2 thin film solar cells to run this. Looks like a little mini weather satellite, actually. And I'm using a guitar string for the antennas.
I particularly like that last one there, $29.99. You can get a 50-foot garden hose extension cord combo.
You know, not get cord wet.
Now, most of these J-poles are built with metal elements or tubing. The reason I chose wire for this one is the length of this particular one. So I wanted to hang it from the tree so I can hoist it up there.
Yeah.
Go fishing.
Well, we couldn't find the reel.
Yeah. Is that what that is?
All right, Tommy, sing the theme song here.
What weather condition might decrease range at microwave frequencies? A, high winds.
B, low barometric pressure.
C, precipitation.
Or D, colder temperatures. What weather condition might decrease range at microwave frequencies? High winds won't affect it. The barometric pressure won't affect microwave frequencies. Colder temperatures won't affect microwave frequencies, but C, precipitation will cause rain fade. Yeah, I'm going to say C.
I would agree with that.
Chat room's all saying C. If you've ever dealt with a small satellite dish like DirecTV or Dish Network, those are microwave.
Unfortunately, I have.
Those are microwave frequencies. What happens if it rains real hard?
You don't watch TV.
That's it. Exactly. So, precipitation. What is the likely cause of irregular fading of signals propagated by the ionosphere? A, frequency shift due to Faraday rotation.
B, interference from thunderstorms.
C, intermodulation distortion.
Or D, random combining of signals arriving via different paths. Okay, this is a little tougher one here. What is the likely cause of irregular fading, signals propagated by the ionosphere, not the ionic sphere. Irregular fading.
You know, irregular.
Yeah, not regular.
Yeah.
Frequency shift due to Faraday rotation. I don't know what Faraday rotation is. I don't think that's going to be it. Interference from thunderstorms. I'm going with D. I'm not 100% positive on this one, but I'm thinking D. Because the other ones don't make much sense to me.
I think you're correct, and that's going to be sort of like multipath.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking. A regular fading might be kind of an effect of that.
Most everybody said D in the chat room. Here, you worked hard for that one.
That was a tough one right there. A little tough.
Yeah. Tom says thunderstorms don't reach into the ionosphere. Never thought about that. But yeah, I don't guess there is any.
Yeah, I was thinking about. I was thinking about that when I was thinking through the question.
Intermod is mixing in multiple frequencies. Nothing happens in the ionosphere. Yeah, it's sort of like multipath. Or I guess maybe it is, in fact, you could call it multipath. Same situation going on. Faraday rotation is polarization change.
Okay.
Never
heard it called that, but
actually that's very interesting there, because when you've got a signal bouncing say off the ionosphere, it can rotate polarity.
But does it shift frequency?
Irregular fading.
I don't think that'd be frequency shift.
Yeah, I don't think, yeah. No, you're right.
Which of the following results from the fact that signals propagated by the ionosphere are elliptically polarized? A, digital modes are unusable.
B, either vertically or horizontally polarized antennas may be used for transmission or reception.
C, FM voice is unusable.
Or D, both the transmitting and receiving antenna must be of the same polarization. Which of the following results from the fact that signals propagated by the ionosphere are elliptically polarized. And that I maybe gave that away a little bit before the question came up. Hey, digital modes are unusable. No, you can use digital modes over the ionosphere. A lot of them are used over it. B, either vertically or horizontally polarized antennas may be used for transmission or reception. Doesn't strictly have to be one or the other. C, FM voice is unusable. No, that's not true. You can use FM voice. D, both the transmitting and receiving antennas must be of the same polarization. So if you were on vertical and I was on horizontal and we were far enough apart, we were using the ionosphere to communicate. The fact that I was one and you were the other wouldn't really matter because the signal is not, it's elliptically polarized. It's not actually what you put in. It's kind of rotating
right
as it goes through there.
So you're saying B.
I'm saying B.
Number B.
What effect does multipath propagation have on a data transmission? A, transmission rates are increased by a factor equal to the number of separate paths observed.
B, transmission rates must be decreased by a factor equal to the number of separate paths observed.
C, no significant changes will occur if the signals are transmitted using FM.
D, error rates are likely to increase. What effect does multipath propagation have on data transmissions? Okay, so let's think about that. Data, timing is usually pretty critical for data. Transmission rates must be increased. Transmission rate's not going to need to go up for that. If anything, it would go down.
Yeah.
B, transmission rates must be decreased by a factor equal to the number of separate paths. How do you count the paths?
I don't know that you could.
And no significant changes will occur if signals are transmitted using FM. D, error rates are likely to increase. And there's the one right there, D. Number D.
That's like the law of the universe there, isn't it?
Yep. Error rates are likely to increase.
Yep. They're saying D over in the chat room. All except for John, who said wind is froze on me, but was still getting audio.
Maybe he's got some multipath going on.
I was just wondering that. They didn't say anything about video in there.
No.
Or Windows.
It's data.
I guess so, yeah.
Which region of the atmosphere could refract or bend HF and VHF radio waves? A, the stratosphere.
B, the troposphere.
C, the ionosphere.
Or D, the mesosphere. Which region of the atmosphere can refract or bend HF and VHF radio waves? This one is one of those you'd have to know the answer to. Well, that's like all the rest.
Yeah, it's not that much there to reason it out. No. Some of them you can reason them out.
It's the stratosphere, troposphere, ionosphere, or mesosphere. Well, being that I know VHF radio waves are affected by the troposphere, that is correct. I don't know where I was going with that. But I know HFs are affected by the ionosphere. I'm going to just take a stab and say troposphere. I could be wrong. It's going to be one of those two.
I have no idea on this one.
Yeah,
I would think C, but I don't really know for sure.
I'm going to stick with B. I'm probably wrong. Let's see if we can pull off a buzzer here. first one tonight. I don't get one for that.
You do because it wasn't
I get a slap on the wrist. What is the effect of fog and rain on signals in the 10-meter and 6-meter bands? A, absorption.
B, there's little effect.
C, deflection.
D, range increase. 10 meters and 6 meters. So, 28 megahertz and 50-something, 50-ish. I don't think that's not high enough that absorption should be a problem, I don't think. Deflection. Range. I think it's going to be B. I don't think it's going to be that much happened to it. I think. I don't think it's going to cause range to increase.
No.
Deflection. It's got to be B, I think. Little effect.
Okay, I'll agree with you. John says the signals get wet.
That's true. That is true, but that wasn't one of the answers.
Think of the size of the droplets compared to the wavelength. That's a good analogy, Tom. Well, Tommy, can you see it coming? What if you showed up here tonight and you didn't have a shirt? What could a fellow do?
I'm pretty sure we wouldn't have anybody watching. But I would have had to go to the swag shop and get a shirt at shop.spreadshirt.com/amateurlogic. But I had to get one pretty quick, though.
Yeah. You'd have to order the express shipping, I guess.
Yeah, no kidding. But we got more of the shirts there. We got coffee cups, caps. There's a lot more than what you see. There are backpacks, all kinds of stuff. Stainless steel mugs, I think. All kinds of cool stuff on there. Amateur Logic and Ham College swag on there. So go check it out.
Yeah.
Actually, Dayton Hamfinching's coming up, so great time to sport your Ham College or Amateur Logic swag around there.
Yeah.
Always appreciate people wearing the colors.
We do. Really do. So go check it out now. Or if you feel like you don't want to order a shirt, you can get one free, possibly. You can get your name in the hat.
Oh, for one of these cool Icom shirts?
Yep.
Sure can. I would encourage you to do that anyway.
Yeah.
What do you got to lose?
Yep.
So just a few bits in your email.
That's it. Just send an email to hamcollege@amateurlogic.tv. And you could show up at an event and have a shirt.
I would recommend that, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always better to have one than to go without one.
Yep. And if you were talking to somebody on the handy talkie on the other side of the ham fest and you just wanted to tell them, because there's a lot of people there, you know. I'm the guy wearing the ham crew T-shirt, and it wouldn't matter if he was in front of you or behind you. He would be able to spot you
right off the bat.
Yeah.
That's true. It's a good point.
Yep. That's all I could come up with right now.
That was a good one.
Yeah. Where could you find out what's possibly going on with the student body?
We're on all the best social media places. Facebook.com/groups/HamCollege.
You could follow us at Ham College on Twitter or X.
And we also have a groups.io, groups.io/g/amateurlogic. If you're not into the social media thing, that's a good one because not a lot of traffic on there, just like an email list, and you get notified
yeah.
when we're going to have a show live streams, things like that.
Yeah, or when a recorded version is posted, and that's pretty much it.
And the net.
And the net, which is the Logic Net, which is, what, the fourth Tuesday?
Fourth Tuesday of the month, every fourth Tuesday of the month. We just had one this past Tuesday, had a nice turnout. It was a lot of fun. Marty, 80PO, and myself called it this time. Mm-hmm. We had a good time. Enjoyed it.
I appreciate Marty standing in because I was supposed to be calling that with you that night and ran into some conflicts. I did show up late and check in. But, yeah, great group of guys on there. And we try out a lot of different modes.
Oh, yeah.
It's a VHF, UHF, and digital net. If you got it, the net probably supports it. I even used M17 this past time for the first time in, I don't know, maybe a year.
Yeah.
And they all communicate with each other. So it's a good way to check out your gear, find out what's working. Do you know how to operate it or program it?
Yeah, it's really a lot of fun. Test. A lot of good guys, regulars on there. We get some new people mm-hmm. here and there, too. And anyway, it's a great time. Come check it out.
So what if you were curious about what topics we covered maybe like 3 months ago here on the show?
I just happen to know the answer to this one because I know the guy that puts the stuff out there.
Do tell.
We have a wiki at amateurlogic.tv/wiki, and we'll put the show notes out there. The questions that we covered for Ham College and the Amateur Logic have all the topics that we did. Any pertinent links that we need to share, want to share with you. Mm-hmm. So it's a good resource.
Yeah. Cool. You know, maybe we ought to put the link to how you could enter the contest in there. I hadn't even thought about that.
It's a good idea.
All right.
Just might have to do that.
Well, I think that's covers it for tonight. Propagation is an interesting topic.
It is.
And one that we as hams cannot escape.
Actually, we kind of live on it, live for it. The HF guys, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's got propagation, whether you realize it or not. Even if it's nothing but a cell phone.
Yeah.
There's propagation occurring.
The ham radio is way better than cell phone.
Yeah. Yeah. Any final thoughts for the class tonight before we go, Dean?
No thoughts whatsoever.
Okay. I see where you're going there, and I like it. And as far as me, you should join us here at the next Amateur Logic, which is either going to be April the 11th or the 18th. I'm leaning toward the 18th. I don't know. What do you think?
That works for me. Actually, that actually works really good for me.
Okay. Since it works really good for Tommy, and I too am in favor of it,
18th
it's probably going to be the 18th because email and Mike will probably say, yeah, that works for us too.
Yeah. So unless we have a conflict, let's do that.
All right. And the next time college is, looks to me like it's going to be April the 25th.
Okay.
Yeah, I know that's like shows 2 weeks in a row.
Again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It happens.
Well, that's good for you guys. 2 weeks of fun back to back.
Yeah.
If you think you can handle it.
If you can stand the 2 week drought in between. Which I'm sure you can. But we appreciate everyone who watches the show live, those of you who watch the download or the YouTube version as well. There's a lot of different places you can watch Ham College. You can watch it on YouTube, as we just said. You can go to hamcollege.tv, and you get links to direct downloads or where you can view it there. There's another good way to watch it. Even our tonight's winner watched it that way.
Yeah, on the Roku.
Mm-hmm.
We're also on the Amazon Fire Stick. I don't even know what they call it anymore. But Amazon TV thing. We're on there. So lots of good places.
Just about anywhere more popular videos are available.
It's where the cool ones are.
Yep. That's all I got.
Well, that was enough.
All right. Thanks, everyone, over in the chat room. Those of you watching live, as we said before, we really appreciate you watching. And, hey, if you got any questions, you can email george@amateurlogic.tv.
Or tommy@amateurlogic.tv.
Yep. And we'll answer.
Yep, sure will. Right. Always love to hear from you guys. 7-3, everybody. Good night.
7-3. What is the effect of vegetation, excuse me, which region of the atmosphere can retract or bend? Refract. HF? What did I say?
Retract.
I retract that.
We have a wiki, amateurlogic.com.
That's all, folks.